Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. And today, we are wrapping up Devin Grayson's run on Gotham Knights. We are talking about issues 14 through 24, I think, although we're skipping a couple. And then we're going to say a little bit about issues. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great, Bob. I'm glad that they did collect these in trades. I didn't know they collected them in trades until last week. So I'm really excited to know that these were actually put into trade if our listeners want to go and read them.
Yeah, and it's a very recent collection. I think it's only maybe 5 years old. And I know this was a run for a long time that people would put on list of Batman runs that most need collecting, which this is a divergence, and I don't want us to go too long with it, Matt, but I just want to make sure that your impression of this jives with me. Do you find it remarkable, given the volume of Batman content that DC puts out, do you find it remarkable how actually poorly collected large swaths of Batman's history are?
I do, because looking at Marvel's collections, where I can literally get multiple versions of the same issues in different prints, different formats, different trades, but with DC, I have to go scrounging for stuff, and it's just, they're hard to find. They're hard to track down. Whereas I feel Marvel continually puts out reprints of older things that people want to read.
Yeah, and you could definitely come up with examples of Marvel having reprint troubles. I'm not saying Marvel would be perfect, but the examples that come to mind to me are Batman Strange Apparitions, right? Steve Englehart, Marshall Rogers run from the late 70s. Seminal, seminal run on the character. The template for Batman 89, such an important comic, such a good comic. And I don't know what the status of it is for right now, but for a long time, the trade was worth over $100. I think I flipped my copy for about $70 10 years ago.
Yeah, I read that copy.
Because they only put it out in one trade, and then, yeah, the trade went out of print. And then another recent example is there was a DC Black Label question book by Jeff Lemire. And we're talking a book that's 5 years old at the most. And I was, oh yeah, I'll get to it eventually when there's a paperback, and I'm in the mood for it. There was no paperback. There was just a hardcover, and the hardcovers are going for $90 on eBay.
Yeah, so yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, they
did. And then with Batman specifically, it's the 70s and the 80s in particular, really poorly collected, but also this run not collected till recently. I think the Ed Brubaker run is still not collected fully right from this era. I think the Greg Rucka run is not collected from this era. It's, yeah, just a lot of stuff that's been overlooked.
We need some omnibus editions where we get everything in there. Because even with No Man's Land, there's still some key issues missing from, well, I shouldn't say key issues. There's still some issues missing that I would like to have, because I'm very much a completionist when it comes to that stuff. I think you are as well. You want to read most of it, right?
Having just finished the Azrael No Man's Land issues, some things are best left uncollected, perhaps.
But you still would want access to them in an easy to reach way. And yeah, as far as digitizing comics, I don't understand why we just can't have digital versions of most of these things. Why can't I just go pull up some website that has Gotham Knights, all the issues ready to go, and I'll pay DC for it. I will. I mean, that's something I would pay for it. If I could get everything that's ever been printed. I mean,
Marvel and DC both have that, but it's not very complete from my understanding.
There has to be someone with that job, Bob, that's just sitting there scanning these old issues and getting them in this digital format.
But I think it's Netflix streaming or Max streaming of some things come on, some things come off.
And that's annoying. Just put everything in one place. Let's just do it. I'll pay your fee. Do it. Because right now you're not getting any money from me.
Well, and the last thing I wanted to bring up, I'm not sure if this is true, but a buddy of mine in Arkansas, he's heard other people speculate that some of the 70s and 80s Batman stuff that's not collected might be because I think in the 70s and the 80s, DC had a weird royalty scheme for their writers and their artists.
Wow.
And another big sore point for me is my beloved Legion of Superheroes, who their great early 80s run by Paul Levitz and initially Keith Giffen, then other artists, never been collected in a decent way. And
wow.
I think some of that was because Paul Levitz ran DC for a long time and didn't particularly care about his old work. The inverse effect of what people accuse Cody Rhodes and AEW of doing.
Well, Bob, even with Nightfall, they didn't collect those in a very prestigious format until recently, last 10 years. I mean, as far as badge issues, I hadn't actually read Nightfall, Night Quest the Crusade, because it just was not put in any format, which I understand why now after reading it, but I still wanted to read it.
And it was also, too, if I recall correctly, the actual 19 issues of Nightfall are not fully what you mean when you say Nightfall, right? Because there's several issues before the crossover actually starts that are pretty integral to the crossover.
Oh, yeah, you have to read those. They like to start the issue. They were starting the original trade at the breakout Gotham, but there's so much build up to that that you don't want to miss out on. And that was
the breakout of Arkham, I think, is before part one, right? Part one is just Mad Hatter.
That is true. I think
the original trade just started at Mad Hatter.
You're absolutely right, because the first image is Batman with his fist up and Robin drawing straight his computer screens with all the different villains. So you're absolutely right, Bob. That is how it started. That was the Mad Hatter issue.
To the early aughts, we'll leave the early 90s behind. To the early aughts, the Devin Grayson run on Gotham Knights. We're starting out with issue number 14, Sibling Rivalry. And Matt, we were just talking about an issue that had a Keely Jones cover. I love Keely Jones or Kelly Jones. We've had Brian Bolan covers for most of these so far. I gotta say, Brian Boland has a strength. He's a justly famous artist for his work on Killing Joke, whatever one thinks of that graphic novel. But I gotta say, looking at the cover for number 14, he's really so good at high-flying action, is he, our Brian Boland?
Bob, based on this cover, I'd say he draws a lot of hentai in his spare time.
Hey-o.
Yeah, this is weird. I mean, you can tell the covers he's done, and it's not my cup of tea, I'll just say that.
Yeah, some of them are good, but this is not one of them.
Definitely not his best, though.
And so what is the summary of this issue, Matt, that this cover is distortedly reflecting?
So, Bob, in this issue, Nightwing with Azrael is chased by two French-speaking acrobatic siblings.
Yeah, and the siblings appear to be reoccurring characters in the Nightwing series based on the references that seems like they've met Nightwing before.
Right. That was my understanding. Because Nightwing got his own...
First things first, did you miss Azrael's long hair? Are you sad that Az no longer has his beautiful blonde mane?
Azrael changes costumes like we change underwear, Bob. I mean, you should know this, an agent of the bat. Doesn't he change his costume pretty frequently, right?
Well, actually, sorry to correct. He basically more or less keeps the old one for a long, long time. And
by
then,
old one, you mean which one?
I mean the one that's pretty similar to the one, maybe not exactly, but pretty similar to the one in Sword of Azrael. They don't actually do the big shift until No Man's Land, and then they shift into that awful costume we saw last week from the earlier Gotham Knights issue.
Yeah, and we're already to this new costume, which is a conglomeration of some of the others, right?
Yeah. Although it's also funny, for a long time when he's in the new costume, they advertise, this is in the 50s of Azrael, I think. They're like, oh, the old costume backed by popular demand. But it's not Azrael in the costume. It's an Azrael doppelganger in the costume that's being controlled by Sister Lily. And so it's actually kind of all a fake out. So he keeps the crappy new costume longer than that description would lead you to believe.
Wow. Okay, yeah, because I mean, he shifts to this other costume in this issue, which it's okay. It's just what you would expect from Azrael. Does he actually have a mask, or is his face just dark? I can't remember.
I believe he has a mask in this.
It's unlike a domino mask, though, right? Underneath.
Yeah.
It's just his face is shadowed, covered in a shadow.
Yeah.
Okay. It is what it is, Bob. I will say this.
So, Matt, there is
an issue in Nightfall where Tim Drake cuts Azrael's long hair.
Don't forget his awful costume pre-Nightfall that looked like the Batman villain Metalhead.
The one-shot villain Metalhead. Yeah, it was just a generic ninja outfit.
Metalhead was the first villain to start the road of breaking the bat. You should respect him.
Bob, Metalhead was the first actual DC Batman comic I ever owned, which is crazy to me.
You came in right at the start of Nightfall.
I got it when I lived in Albany, Georgia, and I was in second grade. And I'll never forget the cover just because it was very violent. I remember there being blood. And I can't let my mom see this.
Exactly. Wow. You were worried about your mom seeing blood. I was worried about my mom seeing a female character's breast in comics.
There you go.
All right, Matt. So were you disappointed when the written narration, the written voiceover returned to these issues? Although here it just returns as a Christmas card from Nightwing to Batman.
The idea that Devin Grayson is going for here is that the Bat family got together after finding out about the files and the previous arc, and they all decided they want to write letters to Bruce to let him know how they feel or how much they either love him or hate him for what he did. It really sounds like something a teenager would do if they struggled to communicate with their parents.
Good point. I can't say I love it as a gimmick, but I appreciate the need for structure to write an issue, so I'm not going to bash it too hard.
And I do like how you get two different versions of this letter piece. With this issue, you have Nightwing, and then the next issue, you have an email from Tim. You can compare the two, the dichotomy. Their structure.
Speaking of tension within the Bat family, I don't know that I really like Nightwing being rude to Azrael. That I don't should Dick Grayson really be rude to people he doesn't like? I don't know how I feel about that. But the art, we've been a little critical of Roger Robinson in the past, but I got to say the art, especially on page 10 here, where Nightwing is arms crossed and Azrael standing next to him, hands clasped behind his back, is really good. It's really good, different postures. There's some good emotion and good contrast between the characters being conveyed and their stances. Some really good Roger Robinson stuff in this.
Yeah, this scene is one of my favorites in the issue, Bob, because it shows that Jim Hall Valley really does know what he's doing with the trackers and everything. Need to trust to call him on that. Mm. And it makes Bruce's decision to hand over the mantle of the bat to him in Nightfall more believable, because he did have that training. He does know what he's doing for the most part. It's just in a different way. Are there any memorable interactions in Azrael, Agent of the Bat, between Nightwing and Azrael?
Well, it's before Azrael, Agent of the Bat, when it's just Azrael, no Agent of the Bat.
Yeah.
But when the nun that JPV Azrael has the hots for, the former St. Dumas nun, wants her first kiss, she asks Nightwing to do it, which causes great, great angst from Azrael. So you can see that this issue is really actually falling very closely to prior established templates of Azrael and Nightwing, it turns out.
I do not remember any of that, but it is interesting. There have been some interactions. I don't remember. I don't have any that stick out to me after post-Nightfall or post-Prodigal Son.
I don't remember how they interacted in Prodigal Son, but in a certain sense, it makes a lot of sense, because I do remember Nightwing fighting Azrael on the bridge being a very big part of early Night's End.
Right. All the fire.
I also did want to say about this issue, it's very good writing, or I don't have good writing. Well, it is good writing in this issue, but I don't know if this particular bit it is good writing, but it's very funny that Azrael's French pronunciation is good enough to excite the Double Dare sisters, the French acrobat sisters, but it's hilarious that he actually can't even follow a question as simple as, where do you live in Gotham?
I had to whip up my phone and use the image translator, Bob, which is so neat, because back in the year 2000, 2001, whenever this dropped, we wouldn't have been able to do this. We'd have to actually go find someone that could speak French and say, hey, can you tell me what this means?
Matt, I read French. Like,
I know you
poorly,
do, but 99% of the people in America, I want to say probably 99.9% of the people in Georgia do not speak French or read French. So it was exciting. I live in Star Trek now. I took my phone and went and used it, and I was like, oh, I see what they're saying.
French isn't as close to Spanish as Spanish is to Italian, but if you know Spanish, you could probably get what they're saying there too.
You could, yeah. But I would use the technology, Bob.
Yeah. I mean, the technology's cool, even though my French reading is not that good. And I like Azrael, I can't do conversation at all. It's too fast. But yeah, I like the feeling of superiority as I'm able to piece together French or Spanish on a comics page.
We can tell, Bob.
Matt, speaking of somebody who could use a little feelings of superiority, could use a little confidence, I did have one of my notes in this issue just be the Chad Dick Grayson versus the Virgin John Paul Valley.
Yeah, Bob, we all lose confidence when we're compared to Batman. You know that, right?
How could you not?
This should be a religion. We all lose confidence when compared to Jesus, but we all lose confidence when compared to Batman as well.
Yes, our so Bat-Messiah.
I do have a question to ask you, Bob. Are women, your place in the world, and Batman the three things you feel the least confident about?
I don't love my place in the world, but I think resigned is a good word. I'm resigned in my place in the world. I don't feel a lot of anxiety about that. I know Batman pretty well, despite the gaps in my knowledge that our conversations reveal. I gave up going after women a while ago, and let me tell you, life is much easier once you leave.
No comment. Now, let me... I will say this, that was Dick Grayson's response to Azrael. So
indeed, like, indeed. Yeah, I see why these are issues of anxiety for Dick Grayson. I'm just saying, whatever my anxieties, these are not my anxieties.
Oh, so you and Dick Grayson do not share the same anxieties.
What I'm saying is, maybe not that anybody should model themselves after me, but maybe I could be a better role model for John Paul Valley than Dick Grayson is what I'm saying.
It's never going to happen, Bob, but okay. Special character from the late 90s, early aught, needs a role model. You're the one to look toward. Okay.
I'm not saying I'm the one. I'm just saying I'm a better one than Dick Grayson for Azrael's particular problems is what I'm saying.
What we need to do, Bob, is find someone who's been programmed to be a killing machine from birth to go and meet you and see if you can change that. That would be a great TV show.
Reminds me of one of the best memes the internet has ever produced. I can fix him, says woman who is worse.
Number 15.
Far from the tree, Matt. What goes down in Far from the Tree?
All right, Bob. In Far From Tree, Poison Ivy breaks out of Arkham and invades a Gotham Rainforest fundraiser.
There's a lot to say about this, and also not a lot to say about this. The two things I want to say, I guess the first one, and I'll let you respond. It's very funny that in retrospect, we now know Tim Drake is bisexual, to see how uncomfortable he is both with Poison Ivy and his stepmother's underwear.
I did not put that together, but you're absolutely right. Going back and we'll look, reading these with the newfound knowledge we have of Tim, things seem so much more interesting.
In fairness, I don't know if I would have caught that either exactly.
Oh, no.
My boy Noah is also reading these, and he's the one who he pointed this out to me before I even read the issue.
Oh.
Although that said, I do think I still would have found very strange that panel of Tim just holding his stepmother's brassiere and looking afraid. That's a very strange panel.
It really is. Did you even remember that Tim Drake had a stepmom?
No, I did not. And you also brought up in the notes that his dad is no longer in a wheelchair. And I didn't think about that at all. But when you actually asked the question, I was like, yeah, you're right. He did get magically healed. Did Chandra King Solving do it?
Yes, I think that was the part. Yeah, she was able to heal him the same way she healed Bruce.
Wild, wild. Well, and then back to the point we were talking about earlier, Tim writing Batman an angsty email he doesn't intend to send and then sends. Pretty bad plot device, but I will say it does have the good contrast that you mentioned with Nightwing's Christmas card from the prior issue, and at least they don't use the email as an ongoing narrative device. It's you only see it on maybe 3 or 4 pages instead of throughout the whole issue, so that's at least some mercy.
I just want you to imagine, though, at the end of the issue, Bob, the conversation prior to that last panel, but after Robin says, hey, can I ask you a favor? It would have to be something like, hey, man, I wrote you an email that I really don't want you to read. Would you be okay if I used the back computer and deleted it? Or do you make up an excuse and be like, hey, man, I was watching porn on the back computer. Can I delete the history before you go up on there? What do you think Tim actually said?
I don't think DC or editorial would have allowed Devin Grayson to end the issue in this way. But if the issue had just ended with Tim telling that to Batman of, hey, man, can I ask you for a favor? And then that was the last panel of the issue.
Yes. It's just, just so the listeners understand, the last panel, Batman is looking away from the Bat computer while Tim is deleting the email on the computer.
Way to fight cybercrime, chum.
It's an awkward panel, and Batman can easily delete the email. This is not complicated for him, I don't think.
It's not complicated for Batman in 2025. Is it complicated for Batman in 2000 or 2001?
Well, this was before Tim Drake was Big Hacker Man, so
he was Big Hacker Man?
Well, if he's Big Hacker Man, why can't he just do it remotely? I mean, he's smart. He can do anything with computers.
I don't know if this is true, but I could maybe see Devin Grayson thinking, Tim doesn't want to hack Batman because that would be unethical or would set a precedent in the relationship.
I also think the definition of hacking in the early aughts and the definition of hacking around when Young Justice dropped and he had all the really cool hacking stuff are very different time periods.
But wasn't he a hacker even back in Lonely Place of Dying? Although maybe they don't use the term, but wasn't he a computer nerd?
He knew how to use computers. But I'm telling you, if you go back and read some of those issues, Bob, the language they use when referring to what they're doing with computers is not the hacking we think of now.
Either you or Noah, I think you sent me some panels of that. It was pretty funny.
Specifically, there was one in Two-Face. There was an issue with Two-Face in
Prodigal.
Two-Face goes and hacks the computers, but it's binary code too and all that stuff. The words that are used in that issue are not actual words you would use when hacking or dealing with computers.
To move on, and speaking of binary, we've got two issues next, 16 and 17, and it introduces a new villain, Matatoa.
Matatoa. Right, Bob, in the summer of this issue, the Matatoa is fearless and immortal, but he needs to kill and consume the souls of his victims to absorb their qualities. Who better to absorb than Batman?
He pitches it to Batman as, hey, I can continue your crusade for you. And he does this in a rather imploring letter that's at least the narration of the first issue, if not the second issue as well.
Correct, yes.
So this issue starts with a dream where Batman has a dream where his parents, the Waynes, are arguing with Nightwing's parents, the Graysons. And in retrospect, an obvious idea, but I don't think I've ever seen it before. So I have to give Devin Grayson props for thinking of it.
Yeah, I really appreciate Devin Grayson bringing in everyone's family tree. We're getting the extended everything. sometimes I even forget that Dick Grayson has such a similar origin to Bruce because he doesn't act like Bruce. He's not his dad.
That's a good point.
So when you see their parents arguing, you're, oh, they were raised very differently up until they're murdered.
Also, did you catch that Thomas Wayne is rather racist about Romanis in this argument?
Did you catch that Batman is rather racist towards Romanis later on?
Well, so I did catch that, but I didn't catch it in this, but Noah did and let me know. And so our retroactive explanation is that maybe Thomas Wayne was racist against Romanis and passed it down to Bruce. Maybe we never see the flashbacks where Tom's had a few whiskeys and is saying racist things about Romanis. But since this is a dream, it's not actually Thomas Wayne, right? It's just Batman's unconscious image of his father. And so
Batman's.
This, what Thomas Wayne is saying about Romanis is actually just a unconscious expression of what Batman will say later in the series, which
could be Batman's justification for being racist towards Romanis, Bob. He blames it on his father.
Indeed. So this actually brings up something I know, but don't often think about, which is that for large later parts of his solo series in Blundhaven, Nightwing was a cop. You got any thoughts about that?
I always felt it made sense in a way to stay for Dick to stay in the loop of what's going on in the criminal underworld because he doesn't have the connections that Batman has at the GCPD. The Blundhaven Police Department, is there a Commissioner Gordon figure there for Nightwing to interact with? I don't know. I haven't read enough Nightwing. So I just figured that. But at the same time, I'm thinking, if you're going to work a police shift all day and then go and be a vigilante, that sounds exhausting.
I mean, you're working from a media conception that a police shift is actually very stressful as opposed to sitting in a cruiser eating a donut.
Well, that too, Bob. If Nightwing's going to spend his days doing that, I guess he could rest up. But I feel Nightwing has the personality type that he's not going to be one of those cops. I would hope not.
I bet Nightwing writes so many unnecessary traffic tickets.
You think so?
I bet he does, yeah.
This makes me want to go back and read some Nightwing, Bob, because I want to see how they actually handled this.
I'm not as dogmatically anti-police as some on the left, but I am still pretty anti-police. And so I'm at a point in my political ideology where I don't really like my superheroes being cops or acting like cops.
Yeah, makes sense. Bob Dorvin, the police guy.
What does the police do? Well, they spend most of the day eating a donut in the cruiser, and then they get out and they brutalize some anti-genocide protesters. That's the life of a cop. I wanted to ask another thing about Nightwing. Do you have any thoughts about Oracle and Nightwing as a couple, or this idea that Oracle is maybe the one? It felt they were really cruising towards a Barbara Dick marriage at this point in the comics.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. And it's also been established, and it's established later on too, that Dick's a bit of a horn dog. So any female character of age is fair game as far as Bat family members go.
Yeah, but it somehow seems like when he gets with Oracle around this time, that's the end of the horn dog phase. He's going to be a one Barbara man from here on out.
I haven't read enough Nightwing. I don't know.
I can't remember how this relationship is broken up. I think it is, but I don't remember how.
Oh, I mean, it totally is because they're not together now.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it would have been presumably reset by New 52.
We never got that marriage issue, Bob.
We never did. You had a good point about the villain of this that I didn't know either.
Oh, yeah. The villain never makes another appearance. However, he does make an appearance in Beware the Batman. And I haven't watched that, but I think you have. He was in the episode.
Oh, I have, but it totally did not register for me. And even when I read it here, I somehow put it in my head as you were talking about the Batman, the one between Batman the Animated Series and Beware the Batman. But now that you say that, it does maybe vaguely rings a bell now that you say it. But yeah, I can't bring anything to mind.
And if you remember, though, too, Beware the Batman was typically chose villains that were not as mainstream.
Katana was the sidekick. Magpie was a big deal.
There's that.
Jade Monkey.
And at the end of this issue, though, even though he never makes an appearance, it sets up a possible him trying to find the master of manipulation. I don't know who that's referencing in DC. Do you know?
It could be Raish, or it could be somebody else involved with the League of Shadows or the Assassin's world, but I don't know who offhand.
But the issue ends with the Matatoa leaving Gotham. So yeah. I just didn't know if he was going to be a villain for another hero or if he was going to be seeking out someone else that could.
Also, I wonder if maybe it's Neron. Maybe he's trying to make a deal with the devil, although what does he have that the devil wants? I don't know. Next issue is number 18, Cavernous. And we've given Brian Boland some much-deserved crap, but this is a pretty great cover, I got to admit.
It is a great cover because it's a scene we never actually see in the comic, but what we expect to see. Always dug this Aquaman design, too. I don't know why. This 90s aqua hand or hook thing, whatever he's got going on here. I don't know what it is. But the long hair with a beard. It gives you Thor vibes.
Yeah, he does give you Thor, Conan the Barbarian.
You need something other than what he used to wear with the orange and green. Just doesn't do it.
So what goes down in this issue, Matt?
Well, Bob, in Cavernous, Batman is bored. So he invites Aquaman to the Batcave, unearth the giant penny that was buried beneath the cave during the cataclysm.
Indeed, indeed. You were expressing incredulity about this story to me over text, and I was just like, what? He needs some bro therapy, man. Batman needs some bro therapy. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
What else would he need Aquaman for, Bob? He's got a boat and a submarine.
I will say, on one hand, this issue is rather weird, but on the other hand, there's a lot of really clever touches in it. It opens with Batman talking to his bats, which is a really funny gag for an Aquaman crossover issue.
Right, yeah. I mean, consider Aquaman talks to this, you know, animal in the sea. Aquaman can't talk to bats, though. So what is the difference between talking to land animals versus water animals?
I assume there is some elaborate half-sciencey justification for it in a 90s Aquaman comic, but I don't know what it is because I haven't read many of those.
I need to know. I've got to know, Bob.
Batman is reading both In Search of Lost Time and Beowulf, or rather he has them in his reading stack, but then at his bedside, he just has King Lear. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, did you catch that he reads all those books in less than an hour because the clock's right there?
I did not, but Matt, I was trying to read all these issues in less than an hour, so maybe that's why.
We were originally going to have to record this the next day because I thought it was going to take me a while to get through these issues. Then I realized if I don't read the backups and I just read the trade, I'm good.
I did enjoy the line in this, too. It must be nice to have kings for handymen. And then Aquaman's just asking Bruce, how are the boys?
How are Tim and Dick and Jason?
Another thing that makes this issue feel a little pointless is that they can't even, I mean, again, I actually really like this issue and think it's rather clever, but they can't successfully retrieve the penny, which is very funny.
This used to bother me, but it doesn't bother me anymore. But the design of the Batcave is always up to artist interpretation. So we see the penny again. I mean, whoever's drawing it.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah. But reading this issue where they can't retrieve it, I did feel bad, but why? Why am I upset that this giant penny can't be in the cave?
Ability is important to you, Matt.
Yeah, it really is.
We're going to a fill-in issue, number 19, Factor of Fear, which is not a Scarecrow issue, despite the fact that I thought it was going to be
an issue. There is a Scarecrow issue in this run, but
I knew there was a Devin Grayson Scarecrow story. Just to say, the art on this is by Dick Giordano, who's a famous editor and famous inker in DC, but I don't think he pencils that often, so it's nice to see him doing a late career penciling. And then the controversial Chuck Dixon is writing this. Matt, any Chuck Dixon thoughts?
Before I praise any of Chuck Dixon's work, Bob, why is he controversial? Just give me a little summary.
Just super right-wing, super homophobic guy. I don't like the man or his political views, but he does write some okay comics in the 90s and the aughts, although he does start writing some really bad stuff later, just weird right-wing propaganda about SEAL Team 6 and what have you.
Chuck Dixon is the Hulk Hogan of comic books.
He is the Hulk Hogan. One day he's going to get booed when he comes back to the big DC live event.
Well, Bob, this issue, all he really writes about, it's a criminal that runs from Batman and he just sees Batman in everything. That's all it is.
Chuck Dixon wrote a lot of Punisher, and this very much feels like it could have also been a Punisher issue.
Yeah, but Bob, it was after this issue that I did send you a text because this is when Batman is supposed to be this urban legend. It just shifts.
Pretty controversial, even in the 90s when that urban legend thing was being dissed at the editorial level. When you brought this up, I was initially going to say that I thought it was just the editorial change that around this time, I'm not sure if Denny O'Neill was the editor on this issue or not, but around this time, Denny O'Neill stopped being the Batman editor and Bob Schreck started being the editor. And I think the Batman was an urban legend thing was a real Denny O'Neill thing. And so once he was no longer editor, there was no longer need to pursue it. But then I found out more information, Matt, and that was from reading the Azrael issues, specifically the No Man's Land issues. And it would appear that No Man's Land deals the death blow to Batman as the urban legend because he's having to be around and visible to the people still in No Man's Land.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, he has to be. And that's how the Batman film, most recent with Pattinson, mm-hmm. he comes into the light at the end, helping people, saving them. Same thing with Nick Van Sland.
I didn't think about that, but you're right. That is an interesting parallel.
All right, Boss, what's this next issue?
Yeah, it's a two-parter, Retribution, issues number 20 and 21. What goes down, Matt?
All right, Bob. So a man claiming to be Dick Grayson's biological grandfather attempts to stop Bruce Wayne from adopting him.
Yeah. And in 20, we also get a little bit of a Superman crossover. I just wanted to flag page 5 of issue 20 is a pretty cool Superman splash page.
This is my favorite panel in the entire trade. It's something about Bruce nonchalantly talking up to Clark from the street. That is brilliant. He's way up in the sky and Bruce is down, almost like a whisper, and Clark can hear it, but no one else can. And then on the following page, you've got Supes changing really fast in a phone booth in front of people, which they don't even know he's that quick. The art here is awesome. This is Roger Robinson. He was an artist on Man of Steel in the mid-90s. So we're very familiar with his work.
That was before he did Azrael.
Correct.
That's funny. Well, and then so, Matt, we have your favorite moment in this whole trade, this whole collection. And then we have our least favorite on page 11, where Batman literally does a you people speech about Romani's to Dick.
This page had me dying, Bob. I burst out laughing. My wife was like, what are you laughing at? Who knew Batman wasn't a fan of gypsies? Awful.
On the one hand, if I'm remembering right in the issue, Dick later plays it down to Barbara because he's, oh, Batman's stressed, which in a certain way is psychologically realistic. This isn't to excuse racism, but people do tend to revert to racism when they feel uncomfortable or stressed. But on the other hand, maybe Batman just shouldn't be a racist. I get what you're trying to say, that a lot of people have racist thoughts and racist tendencies, but maybe you shouldn't make your aspirational hero racist.
Yeah, it was eye-opening. I'll say that.
I want to be clear. I'm saying that Batman, the character, is racist in these issues. I don't necessarily think these issues are racist. Devin Grayson is one of the first writers to really play up Dick as Romani. And she seems, again, I'm not an expert on Romani culture, but she seems to be fairly familiar with Romani culture. And she seems to have a really interesting portrayal in Dick's purported grandfather, Yaska, right? Who is speaking what one might understand as a Romani point of view. Now, how authentic an actual Romani reading this in 2025 would find it, I don't know. But I did just want to say, though, even though I think Batman being racist is hilarious, I don't think the comic is racist. I just think it's the character. And we do get a really clever plot twist, right, that Yaska was actually sent by Ra's al Ghul. I mean, not that Yaska is evil, but just that Ra's al Ghul manipulated Yaska into thinking that Dick was his grandson.
Yeah, I really love the direction this went, because the interaction between Dick and his potential grandfather are played as comedic. And then Uvu breaks in with a sniper and it goes all serious. The cliffhanger of the first issue of, I know all about the secret, only for it to be that the grandfather believes Dick is going to rob Bruce Wayne. That is awesome. Because we all thought maybe he knew somehow. And what?
Well, it's also funny, Dick's response to that is, I've lived with this man for 20 years, and Yaska's just something to the effect of, it takes time, you're waiting for your moment. This is the longest of long cons. I did like at the end of this, too, we see Bruce running down a list of Dick's lovers or ex-girlfriends, including Huntress, Oracle, and Starfire. That was really funny, just because, I mean, in a way, they're pretty unflattering descriptions of the girlfriends, but also it's meant to be a pretty unflattering description of Dick's psychology and how he selects girlfriends.
My question to you, Bob, is did Bruce intentionally not say Starfire's name?
Well, Matt, we saw how he feels about Romani. How do you think he feels about aliens?
Oh, geez. Batman, get it together, man. Batman gets angry, he needs the Snickers, or he gets racist.
There's hanger, and then there's hangerism, which would be hungry, angry racism.
That sounds rough. All right. So, Bob, we decided to skip issue number 22 because it's about cockroaches that are infected with Joker poison. And every scene involving spoiler and Batman dialogue is incredibly cringe. We are going to ask you to skip this issue as to not completely tarnish the run, or read it with the understanding that not everyone bats 1,000. This is the equivalent of hitting the T.
Two things I'd quickly say are, one, it's a Joker's Last Laugh tie-in, which not a great crossover, a big DC crossover, not just Bat Family crossover. And I don't think I disliked it as much as you. I just didn't have anything to say about it. And I love spoiler. I love Stephanie Brown. I think she's a great character, but I didn't find the scenes cringe, but I just didn't find anything interesting to talk about in the spoiler and Batman scenes.
The Batman and spoiler scenes to me in that issue just don't jive the way they did when we see them working together in War Games. Or the prelude to War Games.
I haven't really read that stuff. When I say I like spoiler, I like her in Becky Cloonan's Batgirl series, okay. For example. Or the run around the time of the Grant Morrison run where she was Batgirl. That's a good run.
Just avoid that issue, guys. I'm not a fan of it. It's awkward for me.
Well, we finally get our Scarecrow issue in issue number 23, Fear of Success, Matt. What goes down in that one?
Yeah, they let Scarecrow out of Arkham City to give a lecture in a straitjacket, Bob.
That's how I should start giving my classes. I should get somebody to put me in a straitjacket before.
Show up in a straitjacket and pay somebody to be a cop, just stand by each to make it look like you're there. So.
You're familiar with Chris Jericho's Learning Tree gimmick?
Oh, of course, yeah.
I was joking with another friend how Chris Jericho has the bad apple stand behind him and then to yell out a phrase he says to emphasize it. And I was telling my friend that he tries to incorporate as much heel wrestling persona into his teaching style as he can. I was like, you should really just pay some guy minimum wage to stand behind you bad apple style and occasionally yell out phrases like respect Mr. Eskew, things like that.
Did you ever watch Jericho when he had the list, Bob? The list?
Was that in WWE?
It was in WWE, yeah. If you just YouTube some of those, I think you would love them, because that is my favorite version of Jericho.
I think I saw some of it, but it doesn't ring a strong bell.
Yeah, I do that with people all the time. I go, you just made the list.
Speaking of list, we have Sasha Bordeaux in this issue. Any Sasha Bordeaux thoughts?
So we're going to add her to the list of people that did not appear in Hush. She was talked about a lot as possibly being a big piece of Hush. All the speculation and stuff when the issues were coming out. Never made an appearance. So I'm just going to say she's not one of the characters they really cared about when they decided to
push Batman in the direction. Well, I never read Bruce Wayne Fugitive, but didn't they leave her at the end of Bruce Wayne Fugitive in a way that people were unsatisfied with, but that was meant to be a pause, at least for that point?
She was dead, and she gets reconstructive surgery or something to look like a different person, and then she joins Checkmate, becomes an OMAC. There's all this crap that happened.
That's a couple years later. Right. I was just saying,
it was left ambiguous, and I think it's left that she's missing or dead, because Bruce searches for her at some point.
Yeah, but then there's later, you didn't search that hard. I'm a little more kindly disposed to Sasha Bordeaux than you are. I remember those Greg Rucka comics where she's introduced fondly, although I haven't read them in 25 years, so who knows what I would think now.
She played her part well in those issues, similar to the way Jean Paul Valley plays a big piece in Knives, similar to the way Tommy Elliot plays a big part in Hush. We just introduce these new characters.
Hey, don't you compare Jean Paul Valley or Sasha Bordeaux to Tommy Elliot. They both deserve better. And also, don't you say Tommy Elliot stays a while. Tommy Elliot doesn't stay a while. He literally just shows up for one story.
I'm just saying, Bob, it seems like we introduce these characters and then they don't have anything to do with them when the next creative team comes on. So they go to the wayside and then we get them in everywhere we can fit them.
That's true. Yeah. But then sometimes, unlike with Tommy Elliot, but with Sasha Bordeaux and with Jean Paul Valley, they get their spinoff series or they appear in a different series and they're pretty good. I've read that Checkmate stuff and the Checkmate stuff doesn't need the background of Sasha Bordeaux was once Bruce Wayne's bodyguard. That makes it worse in a weird way, but it's a good series and she's good in it.
And the name recognition made people pick up the issues. Yes.
Should we go on to issue number 24?
The Devil You Know, Bob. Batman decides he needs to face his fear of guns, so he buys one without ammo.
Matt, do you remember Darwin Cook's graphic novel, Batman Ego?
This is where Batman has so much guilt after a guy murders his family and commits suicide. Since he knows that no one will be able to stop the Joker from terrorizing his life, he failed at being a criminal and Joker's going to get him and kill his family and everything. So the guy takes his own life and Batman feels so bad about it that he decides to retire. But his personality is split between the ego, which is Batman, and the superego, which is meant to be Bruce Wayne.
The reason I make the connection is the way the Batman side of Bruce Wayne's personality manifests in ego as a ghostly bat suit. Is pretty visually similar to how it manifests in this issue.
Yes. And it's also how Zurin Thal manifests.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about
years
that.
Years and years later.
Are you thinking more in Batman RIP or are you thinking more in Chip Zdarsky?
I'm thinking more of when you see the Batmite appear, which I believe would be RIP, right?
Okay.
Batmite becomes the ego piece.
There's not that much to say either about this issue or the other final issue 32. Indeed, I would maybe have not even have brought 24 up, except for that similarity to Ego. 24 and 32 are fine. I don't think they're bad issues. They're interesting little standalone issues, but I just don't have much to say about on the podcast. Don't take me short shifting 24 or 32 as an insult to the issues. I just didn't have much to say about them.
Yeah, and then I will say that that final issue in the trade, Bob, issue 32, it was written by Devin Grayson, and it follows Batman over a 24-hour period. I have nostalgia for this comic because I had this single issue as a teenager, and I thought it was really creative the way we were able to see how Batman spent his time as Bruce Wayne in the morning and the day hours, and how he spends his time in the night hours. And it had, here's what Bruce is doing at 9 o'clock in the morning. Here's what Bruce is doing at lunchtime. Just to get an idea of what Batman's actual day is like. I thought that was really neat. And we also get Alfred in the end, which I think Alfred had taken a long, he left. So this just solidified that he was back in the Batcave, back helping Bruce.
I also have memories of this issue, although I wouldn't say nostalgia. Do you remember? So when we were kids, we had the greatest Batman stories ever told, volume 1 and 2. You remember those, right?
Yes, I do remember those.
And then do you remember in the late aughts, they put out different trades that with similar but somewhat different contents, and they would be called, and they had Alex Ross covers, and they'd be called things like Batman, colon, the greatest stories ever told, Superman, colon, the greatest stories ever told.
Dude, I don't really remember those.
I had the Batman one, and this issue was in one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never owned any of those. I know the previous ones you were talking about, they actually had those in the library.
Maybe you had the greatest Superman stories ever told, and I had the greatest Batman stories ever told, volume 1 or something. This has been a fun run. Maybe it was a little overhyped in the discussions I saw online, but I'm glad we read it and talked about it. I didn't dislike it by any means.
So is this the end of Devin Grayson's run on this?
This is the end. 33 is Scott Beatty, Chuck Dixon's sometimes co-writer. And it's a very controversial story that involves Bane. I'll have to double check this, but I think this means that we're going to be reading issues 33 through 49 for next time.
We are definitely entering territory where I was collecting, because this is when I started. If this is the Bane story, I believe it is. It is. Paternity.
It does have to do with paternity. Listeners, this is the one where it's teased that Bane, you know, spoilers, but not really, where Bane is Batman's half-brother.
Look forward to that.
Neither of us have reread these in 20 years, so we might not wind up literally talking about every single issue from the Scott Beatty run. We might skip some stuff like we did with the Grayson run, but I think the actual run of issues, though, at least, is 33 to 49.
I'm actually anxious to read these because I want to see how they read as an adult, a much older adult, compared to when I was a teenager.
Because I believe we hated it when we were teens.
We hated every single bit of it because we thought it was so stupid that they would even try to add this extra element to the Batman mythos.
Well, Matt, speaking of fleshing out the bottom of the list, which is why we're reading the Scott Beatty Gotham Knights and then the AJ Lieberman Gotham Knights, but who knows? Maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe we'll think they're great. But where should the Devin Grayson run go on our list? Just to review the list for listeners, it's an 8-item list. Fantastic Four, John Hickman at the top, then John Hickman, Sanford Green, Doom, number 2, Junie Ba, Boy Wonder, number 3, City of Madness, Christian Ward, number 4, Hush, number 5, Broken City, number 6, Suicide Squad, Get Joker, number 7, and A Werewolf by Night one-shot, number 8. Where would you put Devin Grayson and Roger Robinson's Gotham Knights run?
Below Broken City.
You would put it above Get Joker?
Yes.
If I wanted to put it below Get Joker or below Werewolf by Night, would you want to fight those?
I would not fight you if you put it below Get Joker, even though I just said that I wanted it above, but I'm okay with that because I know what you have for Azzarello, but mm-hmm. I would not put it above Werewolf by Night because that comic is so memorable to me. I don't even like it.
We liked Werewolf by Night. I guess my criticism would be that Jim Gordon is Barbara's biological dad issue.
Oh, there's okay, Bob, we'll put it at the bottom. That is some weird. You're right. It's a little too weird. You're right. Let's put it at the bottom because we're going to see. So I think this next run is probably going to be below that.
I don't want this to be at the bottom, but I think we're going to put both Scott Beatty and AJ Lieberman below it.
We're going to read some way worse stuff. So Bob, this is not bad. This is good stuff.
Just so far, it's just a 9-item list and everything on it is at least interesting.
And we've also done some other things, some other episodes that get lost that were fantastic comic episodes. And I'm so upset that we don't have them, but that would have made the list, fleshed the list out a little more and would have given us more to compare.
We'll get there. Well, this has been Uncanny Trex, covers the Devin Grayson run on Gotham Knights. It was fun to visit some nostalgia, fun to visit some stuff that would have been nostalgia had we read it more at the time. And always good talking with you, Matt. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.